On this episode of Comedy Rewind, does Ace Ventura Pet Detective give us Jim Carrey at his peak? Is there anyone else on earth that could play this role? And how much does the final twist ruin its rewatchability? All of this and more on Comedy Rewind.
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 Push Rewind. I thought this was a comedy show.
What is going on, guys? Welcome to Comedy Rewind. We are powered by Audio Technica as we rewatch the great comedies of the 1990s. I'm your host, John O'Peck, and joining me, for some reason, singing through their butts, we've got a couple of NPCs, Andrew Clayton and Alex Blue Shift.
Hello, doing? It's good to be here.
How's it going, John?
Do you have a mint?
Perhaps some panaka? We can't get into quoting this movie already. It's been like 10 seconds, and I just can see that there's going to be a lot of that. Tell us a little bit about a couple of NPCs. Tell us who you are, what you do, for people who might not know.
So a couple of NPCs, it's just myself and Alex. Two best pals from high school. And we just play games and talk all the time. We have a podcast, we have a YouTube channel. We did stream for a bit, but I'm having a baby, so stream time is dwindling.
It's over.
Yeah, so we do a lot of YouTube stuff. We play games. We got like reviews. I call them instant reviews. It's like in the time it takes you to cook instant noodles, you can figure out what's if a game's good or not. We have a Discord. You're welcome to jump in. But we're just a couple of silly guys playing silly games, being silly.
Mm. And I feel like watching like your Instagram videos that you put up to like promote the streams, there's a lot of actual influence from Love. Ace Ventura what? And that kind of Jim Carrey style. So yeah. You're on the right podcast, aren't you?
This movie, like Ace Ventura, was such a huge part of me kind of blossoming into the comedic flower that I am.
As the third party observer in this situation, knowing having known Andrew literally since high school when he was a young lad of 15, I can, in rewatching this movie recently, I can genuinely say this was the origin of Andrew right here.
I didn't exist before.
Like Ace Ventura either. Was the origin. That was his origin story. He is young Ace.
Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, the first two initials. Ace is AC. Ace, yeah.
Your initials.
Yeah.
Son of a
Mind blown.
Mind blown, yep.
For me, this was a pretty big part of my childhood and discovery of humor. And It's weird going back to watch something that was really central as a kid. What was it like for you guys to kind of go back and watch this one?
I've seen this movie so many times that it was just another viewing. I was like, I could probably not watch it and still quote all the movie, but I was like, no. I'm not going to...
I think you do.
Yeah, I spent my whole high school quoting this movie. I specifically remember there was this this girl in my PE class. And she would sit with me and we would just like quote Ace Ventura for the whole class. It was great.
You must have been popular.
No. No. But yeah, I quoted a lot. Like both movies predominantly. I personally like the first one the best. Yeah, it's pretty great.
What about you, Alex?
So here's the thing, like for some reason I had a copy of the second movie on VHS growing up. So the second movie was one that I watched repeatedly and can quote like nobody's business. But going back and watching the first one, because I think I've only ever actually seen that like maybe two times as a kid.
Blasphemy!
Really? Yeah, yeah. So
I thought you guys lived together at one stage.
My room was secluded.
Okay.
I was practicing my mantra.
Yeah.
So like going back and watching that movie, it was good. It felt good. Felt right. Yeah. I mean, I'll go into it a little bit deeper later, but yeah.
It took you back?
Yeah, it did. It took me back.
That's cool. So let's go over, I guess, our early impressions of this. Like, what was your experience? Do you remember the first time you saw it? Do you remember what you thought of it? Like, what has been your experience growing up with this?
So I don't specifically remember watching it for the first time because I've seen it so many times that it's just this beautiful amalgamation of, like, I view it as like a time skip of me on the couch in different places in my life.
And you're just growing up.
Yeah. but to me, this was the first movie that really introduced me to Jim Carrey and his style of comedy. And Like, yeah. it really resonated with me. Like, I just, everything he did, his mannerisms, like, all the quotes, the silliness, the style of humor, it all just, I was like, this is my jam. And it's, I watched it today and I was just like, still great. I was just like sitting there, laughing my ass off, quoting it. It was just, my girlfriend's probably annoyed at me because she's probably just like, shut the fuck up, I want to watch the movie, but... You know,
here's the thing. Did it when you were watching it? Did you like discover quotes that you had forgotten from time, or do you just like remember all of them?
I think there was one or two
when you were like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna start using that on the day to day."
Yeah, yeah. I swear there was one or two. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah,
I definitely rediscovered a few great one-liners that we'll get into a bit later. But I'm similar. Like for me, it was very much like peak Jim Carrey and getting into him and I feel like every kid discovered Jim Carrey at some point, whether it was at the movies or on VHS at Blockbuster or even on DVD later, and it was just something to dive into at that point because unless you were going to the movies in 1994, which I don't know about you guys, I wasn't quite old enough. I was seven, and if you went a bit later, you had like all these movies, Dumb and Dumber, and the two Ace Ventura movies, The Mask, to just like dive in and like binge watch, and it might be like successive weekends that you just rotate between them. And for me, I remember specifically the year that the second Ace Ventura came out, so it was only a year later, seeing the huge poster at the cinema, and it's that iconic image of him like water skiing on the crocodiles.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinking like, that looks fun. Yeah. But I still wasn't old enough to go see it. But it was only a year or two later, I guess, that I did see it. And it was the second one that I watched first for some reason. And then went back and saw the first one. And I think I initially preferred the second because it's probably a little bit more silly, which now makes the first one hold up a bit better, I think.
Yeah. I noticed that as well.
I probably need to rewatch When Nature Calls just to know for sure, but...
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. When I watched the first one, like, not so long ago, it really put the second movie in perspective, because that's what I had the most vivid memories of.
Mm.
And I feel like the first movie had such a... It was, like, a more serious plotline. Or at least it was, like, handled with a little bit...
It wasn't as fantastical as...
Yeah.
Like, it feels weird to say this about an Ace Ventura movie because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess the second one dials it up to like 1,000 degrees, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say dial to 11, but I feel like that's where they started.
Yeah,
yeah. Dial to 12 and a half, maybe.
Do you know that a lot of his mannerisms, like he actually modeled them after how birds, like his walk specifically, after like birds.
The way he would like turn his head, and it's like, you know, a budgie or something, the way their head just
moves
on a swivel. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I heard that they actually gave Jim Carrey a lot of creative freedom with the script as well for Ace Ventura. And they actually had improv a lot on set.
Mm. So I guess makes some background on this. Like the film was directed by a guy called Tom Shadyac, who wrote the screenplay with Jack Bernstein and Jim Carrey. So they allowed him to improvise and add catchphrases that Jim Carrey thought was funny. And if you go back and watch some of Jim Carrey's early stand-up, there's a lot of these, like, alrighty then, and, like, these words and catchphrases from the movie that he would either use in his stand-up or he might have used them on the sketch show that he was part of in Living Colour with the Wayans brothers. So there's all these kind of things that he's picked up along the way and culminated them in this film, which I would say is peak Jim Carrey. We can probably just talk about him for a bit. And, you know, we've seen what he's done since then, but this is a movie that was written with him in mind, I suppose, or like rewritten with him in mind. And it's just no one else could, like literally no one else could play this character.
I was thinking about that today. I was like, if they had to get like to redo it, I'm just like, I have no idea. Like there's nobody that comes to mind that could do this movie. I don't know.
And if they did, they would just be doing an impersonation of him because it's just him.
Yeah. There's no point. You might as well just do a different movie.
This is getting a little off topic, but I feel like it's the same thing with Robin Williams from the Aladdin movie, the animated one. I think that was also a role that was written specifically for him.
Yeah, they like based Genie off his appearance in some ways, and they pitched it to him with his stand-up matching some of the animation, so... It was definitely with him in mind, but it shows you, I think, like This is really Jim Carrey at his most full-on as basically a walking cartoon character. And yeah. I know that the mask is almost literally a cartoon character, but in that movie, you at least get a break from those antics because he's playing...
Stanley Ipkiss.
Yeah, Stanley Ipkiss, a normal person that turns into the mask. But as Ace, it's like from start to finish, he's just a cartoon character. He's always being facetious or sarcastic, even when he's, you know, trying to make a serious point. There's one moment where he's like sincere, and it's after he's like making fun of Courtney Cox's character.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes in to apologize, but then she's had this phone call.
Yeah,
and it's actually like it really like something that I notice as an adult. Like, oh wait, he's actually being serious for a second, and it's so weird.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
It's funny because I actually watched The Mask recently as well, just because it was on Netflix, and I was like, oh yeah, we'll watch that too. And I feel like that holds up pretty well too. Not like Ace Ventura. Ace Ventura is something truly special, but you know,
that's something that we'll definitely get into, I guess, in terms of how this holds up, because it's a style of humor that's so not really a thing anymore. But yeah, we will get to that. So a bit of background on the movie. We have a film that was 1994. It was Jim Carrey's definitely his breakout film. It was made for just $15 million, which if you do the math means he didn't get paid $15 million for this. And it was the success of this movie, which made $107 million, that let him kind of write his own checks for movies like Dumb and Dumber. The Mask did really well. He had those three movies come out the same year, which we talked about in episode 2 of this podcast. And he was literally the biggest star in Hollywood that year. He had three number one movies, and he kind of just came out of nowhere in that sense. So it's crazy to think back at this being the one that all kicked it off.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I actually haven't watched Dumb and Dumber.
Really?
There's something wrong with you, because
I feel like you've sort of missed the boat on Dumb and Dumber, because Dumb and Dumber's got that like typical Jim Carrey humor that might not have aged that well if you're not watching with nostalgia.
Yeah,
I feel like Andrew would appreciate it, though, based on how much he loves Ace Ventura.
Yeah, it's weird, because I think I saw parts of the newest one. Yeah, they kind
Ooh,
of...
That's a mistake.
Yeah, I was just like...
Do yourself a favor. Go and watch it. It's almost like you've preserved it. Like, Jim Carrey's been preserved for you to enjoy in the future. It's like a bottle of whiskey that no one has drunk for 30 years, and you find it at the back of the cupboard or something like... I'm kind of envious that you haven't seen it, but
or like I've got him, I've got his head in a little Futurama kind of like capsule.
Yeah. So on the kind of the note of Jim Carrey having a hand in this, I've got a quote here that I read from Judd Apatow just recently, who kind of toiled away in the 90s writing and rewriting and editing scripts, and he said Jim Carrey was so odd that there were no movies laying around that were perfect for him, and he created this incredible career by doing this revision on Ace Ventura and tailoring it for himself. And I think a lot of other stars ended up doing the same kind of thing in the coming years, Adam Sandler and people like that. So it really, I think, is a significant movie from that perspective. And let's go a bit into the cast of this film. We've talked about Jim Carrey. We've got a young, very young Courtney Cox. What did you think of her performance in hindsight, knowing now how much of a huge star she's been from Friends, obviously, and TV shows since then?
Well, it's good to see her play another character that has a name that starts with M and ends in A. but no, I thought she played the part really well. Like, yeah. I had nothing against her. This was like, I think this was at a point where she, before she got too much work done, like plastic surgery and stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, like, no, I think she was like quite beautiful in this movie. Yeah.
She does a good performance too. Like, it's hard to stand next to Jim Carrey at the best of times, but when he's Ace Ventura, you kind of need someone that's completely straight and able to react to his shenanigans in a way that seems like normal.
Yeah.
It's a pretty hard task.
Yeah, no, in terms of contrast, I think they totally nailed it in that respect. Like, she does have that sort of like, I wouldn't say stoic demeanor, but she's definitely like at least level-headed.
she gets the balance right of like she's rolling her eyes at him, but you can see she's also kind of charmed somehow.
That's probably the most confusing part.
I don't know what's confusing about it. I've been charmed for years.
It's like the way that they hook up is kind of like, really? Like him?
Yeah. That took me by surprise. I'm like, oh, that was quick.
Hey, three times, all right? He's tired.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
So we might do a bit of a round of What Have You Done For Me Lately. And with Jim Carrey, we know we've got the Sonic the Hedgehog movie coming out in 2020. Ooh. It's going to be obviously an Oscar nomination for him as Dr. Robotnik.
I'm reserving judgment until I see it. Yeah.
That's all we can do. That's all we can say.
At the very least, it looks like Jim Carrey's taken that role, and just by promotional footage that we've seen so far, it looks like Jim Carrey's taken the role of Robotnik and made it his own. Mm. It's not like a comic book version of Robotnik, it's like Jim Carrey as Robotnik. And I think that sort of puts me at ease a little bit.
Yeah.
He's going to carry that movie. He's going to carry it.
Yeah, he is.
And he's got another series of, or another season of Kidding coming out. I don't know if you guys have seen that show, but that's quite interesting. He's playing like a kid's entertainer who goes through like a bit of a family crisis. And it's quite interesting. It's on Stan if you have that and want to check it out.
Stan!
Sean Young playing Einhorn in this film. She had a really impressive career leading up to this movie. She was in Blade Runner. She was in a couple other big, like quite serious films, so this is probably a departure for her to play a comedic role. And she recently reprised that character in the Blade Runner sequel just a couple years ago.
Yeah, no. Is that that's the one with Ryan Gosling, right?
Yeah,
that was garbage.
I still haven't seen it. Am I wasting my time? Should I not bother?
It got pretty good reviews.
It's all about it's relative, Alex.
I haven't seen it, so I can't tell you either.
I personally thought the second movie was really, really, really terrible.
Did you watch the first one?
No.
That might affect it.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you recognize Detective or Lieutenant Einhorn in that movie?
No, I didn't.
No. Well, there you go. Courtney Cox, she's kind of done no big movies since Scream movies, which was, I think, three or four. And
has she been doing a lot of TV stuff?
Yeah. Like since Cougar? Friends, I guess she's done Cougar Town. She's done appearances in different things. So I guess she's decided that's where she's happiest making those kinds of things. I feel like she could have easily gone into film the way that Jennifer Aniston has.
Yeah, 100%.
She was a pretty big star, but
too busy going out in the wild with Bear Grylls.
That's it. Tone Loc, I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce his name. He's like the rapper who's playing the cop in this movie, Emilio, Ace's friend. He's done no movies for years.
But
I just thought he deserves a shout out.
He's probably just upset that the cockroach has a big
Well, no, that's John Capodice there, who's definitely still working as Aguado.
Aguado, that's right.
Yeah. He's not a rapper, no. Well, Rotten Tomatoes, what do you guys think about the way this film was received when it came out? Do you think people liked it? Do you think people hated it?
It's weird because back in those days, I never really paid attention to how other people perceived it. Like nowadays, because of social media and everything, I'm so aware of how the world sees something. A lot of the time you'll know, you can see
the
people enjoying,
before you see them. Yeah,
exactly. Whereas this, that was before all that. So I just watched it. I honestly have no idea. I assume it was well received for it to get a sequel and to catapult his career. But like, I have no concept of how
much it obviously did well from the fact that it made so much money. It was a huge hit. The critics gave it kind of mixed reviews. The Rotten Tomatoes score is 47%, which means about half of the audience, half of the critics didn't like it. And I actually remember when I was probably 15 or 16, I used to work at a newspaper just doing like some stuff at night. Like, it's not worth explaining what I did, but I did some work there. And I remember one of the desks had like this book, and it was like a book full of like basically a summarized movie review. It was like an encyclopedia. And being like a 15, 16 year old kid, I was like looking up my favorite movies, looked up Ace Ventura, and like the lowest score that they would give a movie was what they called a turkey. And they gave Ace Ventura a turkey, and there's like a one paragraph review. And I was like, That kind of opened my eyes to, people don't like these kinds of movies. Like, critics don't like these kinds of movies. And I think it's a good example of something that, the people that go in there expecting you know, art might see this and think less of it. I've got a quote here from Entertainment Weekly that says, Carey suggests an escaped mental patient impersonating a game show host, and what's worse, his hyperbolically obnoxious shtick is the whole damn show. What do you think of that?
Hey, fool, you all right?
That's harsh. So harsh.
Yeah.
Like, can a critic's review really, like... I feel like it can't really sort of accurately represent your average Joe going in to watch the movie, like...
Because their job is to... They're going in there to pick it apart.
Yeah, exactly. They're going in there to analyze, like, hyper-analyze the movie, whereas, like, you know, your typical Joe Blow just wants to go in there and turn off his brain and have a good time. And yeah, I think for that purpose, for strictly entertainment purposes and comedy purposes, I think it does its job.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I think when it comes to these things, you have to look at what the movie's attempting to do. So you can't rate like Alvin and the Chipmunks up against like the Big Lebowski, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's two different things. And often, you know, a High School Musical or something, like, is it a good movie objectively? Probably not. Is it a good movie to take your like 12-year-old daughter to with a good message? I don't know because I haven't seen it for years, but I'm guessing it. You know, there's a spectrum there, and
yeah,
I think Ace Ventura sits right on that like that playing field of this is a ridiculous film that will make you laugh many times. If you don't laugh, you either hate Jim Carrey's style, and a lot of people do.
Yeah,
they just don't get it, or it's too much for them. But if that's not you and you don't enjoy this film, then you're just never going to enjoy a Jim Carrey movie, really.
It just sounds to me like that critic was a loser.
And there we go. Oh, man. Anyone want to guess what the number one movie was? Sorry, the number one song when this movie released in February of 1994?
Don't you forget about me.
I have no idea. That was in the
80s. Yeah, I know. Don't ask me why, but in my brain, I was like, don't you? Yeah, anyway.
Anyway, it was All for Love by Bryan Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting, which is apparently from the Three Musketeers soundtrack.
Wow.
Ever heard of that song?
That sounds like.
Yeah. I looked it up, and it doesn't sound like anything that anyone would listen to now at all. So,
well, not with that attitude.
I don't want to listen to it now, but...
just to get a taste.
I don't think it's the time.
I want you to soak in the year, you know, just, yes.
Yeah, it's just good to set the scene, you know? This is what the zeitgeist was all about at the time.
Mm.
So, speaking of zeitgeist, what do you feel like is the most 90s moment of Ace Ventura, Pet Detective?
For me, I think the most 90s moment, just in how it was done, is... basically, when he goes to the party and he does the Mission Impossible thing to sneak into the back, and just the way that that whole scene kind of played out, like the close up of his face as he did the when he was in the water with the shark, it's not Snowflake, and it was just like him just getting dragged around. It represented a lot of the style of comedy for that like age.
Very slapstick, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there were like two scenes for me that sort of screamed 90s sort of nostalgia. And the first one was, it's like he goes to this like mad rave and then he makes his way through the crowd. And then he ends up at like stereotypical 90s hacker guy's headquarters.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And he's just like, oh, no worries, man. I got it. Brrr. Smashing away at his massive CRT monitor.
Is it the red or white chowder?
What?
What?
You know, he knocks on the door.
Oh, the door's code. Oh, come on, God guys. Damn it.
The password.
Red or white.
That's right, it was white.
I also had Madinga, I think is the guy's name, who's like, when he first turns up, he's hacking the whaling boats. And it's like, I'm going to send, he's like sending.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And it's the old like green
the military
screen.
Sonar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Which is, it's the type of computer you might remember at like the local library in the 90s, that kind of thing. And... yeah, I've always, when I speak about this category, I always go to technology because it's such an easy thing to date a movie.
Yeah.
But you had the way that guy was like hacking and like looking up articles, basically.
He had glasses his glasses.
Yeah, he had two pairs of glasses.
That's right.
But then there was also a couple scenes when they were doing their own research on AFC, the Dolphins team or whatever. They're looking at this pre-internet news clippings using like microfiche, like the film, like the reels in the, they used to, am I explaining this right? Before the internet, you could read newspaper articles on these big machines.
What?
And just kind of reel through them.
It was like a massive Rolodex or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, basically. And it was also something that they had in libraries before, I guess, digital archives existed. But like the fact that it's hard to explain just proves how dated it is. And then there's a scene at Finkel's house where they're watching like the tape of his, you know, Super Bowl stuff up, and it's a film reel.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I love a bit of old analog technology.
Laces out, Dan.
What about at the very end of the movie where Lois whips out that massive mobile phone, makes a call, and then Ace is like, careful. Like, something about, like, he makes a comment about it giving her brain tumors or something.
Long-term exposure could give you a brain tumor.
That's it.
That's super 90s. Like, that was the fear. I know that, like,
yeah.
I wouldn't have been on the, you know, in the conversations about mobile phones in 1994, but especially, like, when they were becoming more common, people were worried about... Some people are still worried about that. I've heard of people that have certain kinds of cases. My friend Marto, shout out to Marto. His mum made him get, like, a special case because she didn't want him to get, like, cancer or something.
Do you want to know another 90s thing from that whole movie?
Yeah.
The music for the credits. How it was just, like, Jim Carrey, like, hey, drop the beat, bro. And then it goes into, like, kicking for the homies. Oh, my God. Guys.
Yeah. Oh, guys. That's great.
Yeah, that was so 90s.
Yeah. Well, the rapper for that song is Emilio, who's, like,
his
cop friend in the movie.
That was before DMX got into movies.
And Ice Cube.
And Ice Cube, yeah.
This movie would have been a lot better with Ice Cube in that role, I have to say.
Yeah,
just a couple years
ago. How old was Ice Cube back then?
He was kicking around.
He was still water.
Friday and Boys in the Hood and that were only a couple years later.
Yeah.
What was the most iconic scene in Ace Ventura? This is a tough one.
For me, the most iconic scene... I still see a lot of references to, like, all the animals in his apartment. Like, that whole scene of him going home and, like, how he brings his homework.
Yeah, it really shows who you're dealing with here. Like, this guy's kind of crazy.
And I always, this is one of my favorite quotes when the landlord's like, Ventura, and he's like, yes, Satan? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You sounded like someone else. And then, like, he always got the keys, like the jingling to kind of warn the animals. And I always see memes still of like him being like, come to me, my jungle friends. And they're all like flocking to him. And he's just like,
it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Did you recognize the landlord?
Oh, I do, but it's been driving me crazy. I'm just like, what the f*** is he from? Could have Googled it, but I didn't.
It's Hector from Breaking Bad.
Oh my.
Ringing the bell, man.
Holy s***.
Jeez. Andrew's walked off.
Mind blown.
Oh my God,
Mind blown.
Well, he doesn't have any Oh wait, no, he does, doesn't he? He does have spoken lines. It's just not. They're not in English.
Did he like tap or was it tap? Or he had
he's ringing a bell.
It was a bell.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. So in Breaking Bad, you only get some Spanish lines from him in those kind of flashbacks pre like stroke or whatever he had.
That's what happens when you don't get rent.
Yeah.
Poor bastard. Look where he ended up.
I know. No spoilers for Breaking Bad, but we know what happened.
What a great
anyway,
show.
Yeah.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Yeah. Oh, Alex.
Alex, what was your most iconic scene?
Ooh, I gotta agree with Andrew. That opening scene where he just sort of like puts out his hands and just summons those animals to him. But another scene later on when him and Courtney Cox's character go to the party and he uses the toilet. And then it comes out and he's like, don't go in there.
Yeah, that's
if I was
awesome.
Drinking out of the toilet, I could have been killed.
Well, that's good, because I had a couple different answers from you guys. For me, I felt like at least two of the most iconic scenes were solving the murder or the apparent suicide apartment.
I had that here as well. That was my
so
other
the,
one.
It's the whole speech, the whole like opening and closing the sliding door while he's like singing and then saying that he's exercised the demons. I feel like that scene is kind of peak Ace Ventura.
This house is clear.
And it does such a good job of like showing, even though this guy is a joke, he's smarter than everyone else.
as well. He's smarter than the average bear.
Yeah. And then the other one I had was The Visit to Shady Acres, where he's playing the, I guess, football mental patient.
Larry.
With the tutu. And he's, you know, he does the whole slow motion replay. Yeah. He's like jumping through the bushes.
I'm going to execute a button hook pass. It's super slow-mo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I feel like those two scenes, for me at least, stand up as fairly iconic.
It's hard because, like, to me, that whole movie is just so... The whole movie to me is iconic. So to pick a scene, it was so...
It's hard.
So difficult.
Mm. Well, I'm going to make it even harder for you and ask, what holds up the best?
Personally, I think the opening scene is so, so great. Like the whole delivery man thing.
Yes.
The way that the movie opens up and introduces you not just to Ace Ventura, but like how he, like what he's about as a character and like the style of humor that you're gonna get exposed to throughout the movie. It does such a great job of like opening the movie, you know?
Yeah, it's a pretty great opening gag just with the parcel.
Yeah, it sounds broken. Most likely, sir.
It does. It sets a tone for the rest of the movie, in my opinion. It's like, that section of the movie, it's like a small sample of what the entire movie is. It's like, it's just really well executed.
Mm, yeah.
And that was actually my one as well, you bastard. You stole it from me. You know what it's I love, though? I love how, yeah, like, in that opening sequence, his car gets beat the crap out of, and he never gets his windshield fixed. He's always hanging out the window.
Warning, yeah, assholes are closer than they appear.
It's a great continuity thing there, having the broken windshield for the whole yeah, movie. Even, like, he's driving to the police station. They don't tell him to fix it.
Yeah, I know, right? They just want him gone. That's the main thing.
It does do a good job of telling you who this guy is. Like, he's having a laugh even when there's no one in on it except for, yeah, himself. He's just like he's amusing himself.
Yeah. And then like him actually rescuing the animal, you know, it shows that, yes, it's not just, yeah, him being a d-head, it's him, you know, it's d-head with purpose.
Exactly. So I took this question literally for fun and said that what holds up the best? Ace Ventura's hair, because that thing does not move the whole film. The side, yeah, part, you know why? It's impeccable. And that is that the side part is in fashion now. I don't know about the kind of the twirl that he has, but that side part is probably the envy of many a hipster.
It's because in this movie, nobody messes with the do.
That's true. Oh,
no. That's a sequel, Andrew.
I know that. That's why I said that.
That's a flash forward.
A flash forward, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I remember like the hair, even as a kid, I was very impressed with the hair, you know. You'd have a shower, you get out the shower, try to recreate it without any product. It's never going
to
work.
I got another one. When he delivers the dog back and he gives it to the girl, she's like, how could I ever repay you? And he's like, oh, well, there's some damage to my car and it's a high performance vehicle. And she goes, take your pants off. And he's like, gee, let me think. When I first saw that, I was too young to realize what was going on. I'm just like, oh, I don't know, I don't get it. But like... Oh, like as I grew up and watched it, I was just like, okay, she's got some power there. Dang.
It's a weird scene though, because you can see the top of his pants and they're still on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she just undid the fly or something.
Okay, sure.
What are they implying in that scene? Are they implying that she's got like such... Wait, should I go into this? Because he's moving around a lot. He's moving around
just,
a lot.
We can just leave it at that. We can leave
okay.
it.
Okay.
People can read between the lines. Yeah, I mean, the one-liners in this movie hold up quite well too. Like I said before, there are a few lines I'd forgotten about and they just still work really well, especially when Einhorn, I think it's the first time you see her and she's like, I could make your life a living hell. And
he's
like,
sorry, I'm not ready for a relationship right now.
Exactly. That one got me really well. And then there was like, I'm looking for Ray Finkel. Then the shotgun comes out. And a new pair of shorts.
yeah. So good.
Okay. Well, I think we can agree. A lot of the humor holds up really well. What holds up the worst?
I personally believe that the revelation of the plot line and Einhorn being the culprit, I think that does not age well.
Yeah. That's the elephant in the room for this movie. And I think it's been like almost everybody in the last... you know, depending on how woke you are over the past like 5 or 10 years, has had a moment where they're like, oh, that scene in Ace Ventura was like kind of offensive.
Yeah, it's just, it's something
just tacky. Like the way that it was done, it was like making fun of a group of okay, in this case, it's trans, like the characters are revealed to be trans and it's this huge twist. And like, there's some humor in like that scene for me when he realized that he made out with a guy. Okay. But then like the part where they like, you know, strip away the clothes.
Yeah.
It's like in the search for like a ultimate punchline, making fun of a group of people is never really a great way to do it. Whether it's trans, whether it's like Jehovah's Witnesses, paraplegics, people of color, like it's not really something that would fly now.
So it's funny because until I watched it again recently, I never even thought about that. I never thought about it being offensive to like all these other people, but I never thought about it like as being derogatory either. I just viewed it as more of an identity theft more than the actual gender part of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, it's just one of those things that it's because we're exposed to so much of that and how people are becoming more sensitive to it because obviously it's a very serious subject. Yeah, it didn't age well, but to me, I can't ever view it like that because I personally just, I don't see things that way. Like I said, it, to me, it was more of an identity crisis more than anything.
So if you've watched this movie like semi-regularly, whether it's like every couple of years or every year, was there a point that you actually, that it hit you that people can have an issue with this?
Yeah, it was about 2 or 3 watches ago.
Okay.
But, yeah, about 2 or 3. Because, like I said, it was just not something. I never viewed it that way. I never viewed it as, like, you know, being against people. I just viewed it as,
right,
you know, like a, like, he's doing, is like, very character specific. And, you know, it was, yeah, but
I didn't even understand the joke when I was a kid. Like, I had no idea. Like, when he kind of turns her around and shows, like, the back of her at the end, like, I didn't understand what I was looking at.
Yeah, I was like, did he have a big shit or big football? Yeah, I didn't know. But, like, that's, like I said, that's just something that, you know, the world is being woken up to. And I think another thing with that is also mental health. They don't go into it too much, but the way that mental health is kind of painted in the sense of like Ray Finkel and his mother, it's very negative. And once again, I never thought about it that way, you know, but like I said, we're all getting exposed and, like we're seeing how much of a serious thing this is. And, you know, it's just,
yeah. And it's always tough with comedy, especially when you have a movie that's so zany and pretty much anyone that's portrayed in this movie is getting stereotyped, whether they're a cop, whether they're, you know, a bimbo or a football player, like, and then you delve into these, I guess, marginalized stereotypes, or they're not even stereotypes, it's just like the mental health one specifically, it's like the most cartoonish version of someone with mental health problems. And yeah, it suddenly becomes a bit more of a problem. Alex, what did you have as a read on this when, I guess, you hadn't watched it constantly over the years and then you're just kind of catching up on it now?
Yeah, so it's kind of like what you said earlier. Like, you watch it as a kid and you don't understand. It's like they turn Lois around at the end of the movie and you're like, I don't get it. I'm a kid. But then, like, literally yesterday was the first time I'd seen the movie in years. Like, I'm talking, not since I was a kid.
10 years?
And, yeah, no, more than.
That sounds so crazy to me.
It does. But that's, it's because I rewatched the second movie over and over again, not the first movie. But it is sort of eye-opening. You sort of watch it and you're like, ooh, they can't do that nowadays. That's not something that you can get away with.
No. And, yeah, it's interesting because even at the time, like, there was a lot of human rights, well, I guess it was a trans rights group that had a big issue with it. And the reveal where he's doing the huge overreaction of like burning all of his clothes and
you
know, he's putting the plunger on his face and
yeah.
And like Jim Carrey talked about that as I guess he was trying to show the most over-top reaction possible to kind of say something about who Ace Ventura was. It wasn't meant to be a statement or anything, but you can see how people might take it that way, definitely.
Yeah. Like, if I was part of the LGBT community and I saw that, I don't know if I would really enjoy the movie. I would probably be like, oh yeah, this is funny, and then that stuff happens and I'd be like, oh, that's not cool, man. That's not cool. Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame, because that's one of the things I think holds it back in its era. Like, it's going to be really hard for that movie to kind of either be redone, remade, or reviewed in the same way, just because that's how comedy was in those days. You just everything was up for grabs, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, and I feel like comedy is dated. It really is, and the things that you could say back then and sort of kind of get away with, they're just completely different now. People are just so much more aware, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but
there's a reference
to this movie where Jake Peralta, Andy Samberg's character, says, "Classic film, one of my childhood favorites, and it only gets overtly transphobic at the very end, so it's a win."
Wow, it's so true.
God damn it.
So aside from that obviously huge part of this movie, there's a couple, we'll get more to that in the next question, but there's a couple moments for me where I guess just the humor I felt like doesn't land quite so well, and it's that element of it being surreal, and there's a couple moments where it is very apparent that this couldn't not happen in the real world. I feel like most movies these days try to ground it. They give characters a humanness, whether it's something like Superbad or Knocked Up or Bridesmaids or whatever it might be. We're getting these human characters, but Ace Ventura, as I said before, he's a cartoon character. He catches a bullet in his teeth. He's getting dragged around a shark tank by his feet, and then he's coming out with ripped clothes.
No wounds at all.
He wasn't drinking out of the toilet. But it's just the style of the movie, and it's something that was huge in the 90s, this kind of, I guess, more family-friendly comedy, and it's escapism, I guess, and this could never really happen. But I feel like now, if we're talking about what holds up, I feel like that style just kind of doesn't, unless it's what you want, and then it's right there, and it's in all its glory.
I do like all of its glory.
Well, if that's what you want, it's right there. So we've covered, I guess, that the issues there with the trans community and mental health. So who do you think would be the most offended now?
I think it would just be that. I think outside of that, there's not really much.
Mm. What about Peter? They're always a candidate in this question. The animal protection people.
I was like, who's Peter? Is this Spider-Man?
Did they express any negativity when this movie came out? Or
I don't know. There's a lot of animals in the movie, that's all. And
but they're not hurt. They're all friends. Unless you count the guy in the bird suit.
Yeah.
She cost me a $25,000.
It might be Philadelphia Eagles fans that were most offended.
Are they against animals in captivity? Because if they are, they might be sort of upset with what's the name of the snowflake? Is that the name of the dolphin? Yeah, being returned to captivity.
It's funny because Ace is this animal lover, basically, and I guess it's his job to do what he's doing. But if this movie came out now, we'll get to that a bit later. Does Ace Ventura pass the internet relevancy test?
I think so. Just there's so much meme and GIF potential.
Yeah.
When he exercises the demons and he does the pelvic thrust or the animals flocking to him from his room. There's so much. It's so good. Yeah.
I did a bit of a search just on the Twitter finder, and like there's throwing the parcel getting like caught in the elevator.
all the alrighty then moments
and dancing in the tutu at the asylum is one that comes up quite often. There's probably like a good dozen or so like reactions that you see fairly regularly. So I think from that perspective and just how animated Jim Carrey is, it just works so well.
I think that's why it works, because just how animated he is as a character.
There's a scene during like the montage where he's trying to find
the gem.
The ring.
Yeah, the gem. He's trying to find the ring. And like, I think that section there is like full of freaking meme gold, that entire montage. But there's one that stood out. It's where he's like, he's at the hat signing.
And he's simply face,
and that weird awkward smile that he gives at the end. I'm like, I'm gonna find this and turn it into a GIF. I need it in my life.
I dropped that one into our group chat just yesterday, I think.
When you did, didn't you?
When we were trying to find a time to do this recording.
That's the one. So good.
Yeah, there's so many, and it's not the sign of a good movie, because like a movie like Clerks has almost none that come up. But it's definitely, like, this movie is gif-able, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
If that is such a term, you know.
It is now. Coined by APIT.
How do you guys think smartphones and social media would change Ace Ventura?
I think security cameras would help, because there's no way he'd be able to get away with doing anything if there were security cameras, and all the evidence that he has becomes invalid because he doesn't have a warrant to get all this, all the stuff. So, none of that would hold up. But I think some of it also comes down to social media, in the sense that, like, the Super Bowl's coming up. Oh, we don't have our thing. Information spreads like wildfire. All it takes is one person to leak it, and it will just go everywhere. And one of the things you see in the movie is they show a lot of like the professional and the business standpoint of how it's all playing out, but they never show you the general public. And I feel like that would be such a bigger part of it if social media and phones were part of it.
Well, I guess they kind of kept it under wraps. That was the idea, wasn't it?
I just feel like having like internet and social media sort of in the movie, I feel like you would have cracked the case sooner, if you know what I mean, because information as it is now, it's so readily available to us. Like, we can just whip out our phone and look up whatever the heck we want. So I feel like the whole Ray Finkel thing, you know how there was that whole inconsistency with the photo? It's like, oh no, Ray Finkel was added like mid-season or something. It's an obsolete photo. It all that information would have been like readily accessible at the very beginning. And he'd be like, oh, Ray Finkel,
Wikipedia.
Screwed up the winning kick, Insane Asylum, okay, sweet. I'm on the right track, bam.
Half the movie gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, like, for me, there's two things. I think, first of all, Ace Ventura would be hugely famous, I think. He's like...
yeah.
Like, if this guy was on TikTok or Instagram, or he'd probably be a YouTuber or something... He would be so famous as the guy who solves pet mysteries. Like, that would be such a big thing, I reckon. He'd probably be on talk shows and everything.
If there is somebody out there that's actually like that, hit me up, Baclay1788. I need to just know and follow you on all things.
Yeah, I feel like since this movie's happened, someone must have done that. I'm sure there's, like, a small-town newspaper article with a headline, like, real-life Ace Ventura. But anyway, first of all, I think he'd be hugely famous. Secondly, I think the whole what happened to Ray Finkel thing would not be a mystery at all. Like, it would be so hard.
No. Yeah.
They play it like, the world was watching. The kick, the world was watching.
Yeah.
Laces out, Dan.
I feel, I know people steal identities and stuff these days, but it's more like, it's not like they've literally resumed that person's identity. Use their credit card or something.
You would just find it on a random newspaper in an insane asylum.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't answering the question. It's more of just like a plot hole, but how could someone just become a chief of police, like a football player, become a qualified chief of police?
Well, it took him 8 years to become a lieutenant, so...
Yeah.
Or for her to become a lieutenant.
I think I'm not sure if I want to say this, but I think, you know, the very end scene where, like, it's revealed that Lois is a man and then everybody starts spitting?
Yeah.
I think they're trying to suggest things.
I thought they were all throwing up.
Were they? I thought they were, like, spitting.
No, I thought the whole idea was, like, they reveal it and then, you know, everybody's reaction is to throw up.
I think Alex is saying that they're all throwing up because they all made out with her, essentially.
Yeah.
In their brains.
Possibly.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. That's an unknown, I guess. Yeah. Unanswerable question. But anyway, I guess what my whole point was, I've gone completely sidetracked, but I feel like, I don't know, did you guys listen to Serial, like the podcast, or any of those kinds of mystery, true crime things?
No.
There's always like massive Reddit communities and people doing their own investigations into these things, and they...
Because the Reddit detectives are serious, they don't f*** around.
They are serious, and like, sometimes they actually reveal things that you just couldn't find out without a huge amount of people researching something. And they would definitely find out what happened to Ray Finkel. Like, this football player that disappeared, where did they go? He's this celebrity. He's not going to just disappear. It doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
Especially these days.
So what you're telling me is that if Ace Ventura was like, had social media and smartphones and all that, you're telling me that it becomes Ace Ventura Reddit detective.
Yes. Ooh. Exactly. He'd be on the pet Reddit.
The pet Reddit detective.
So, could you make Ace Ventura in 2019, and what would the 2019 version look like?
The 2019 version wouldn't have the scene skipped where he's the dolphin trainer. I just realized that. I was watching it and I was like, so you know how he finds like the pebble thing in the yeah. fish tank? When I watched it on Stan, there's supposed to be a scene, because I loved quoting this so much. There's a scene where they're like, oh, where's Snowflake? Where's Snowflake? And then they look and he's in the tank. And like, he's in that like see-through part. And he's like, can we stop with the shouting? And then like, he comes out.
Yeah, yeah. I watched it on Amazon and they took that part out as well.
Yeah. Hmm. Train the dolphin, you must sink like the dolphin. Yeah.
Do you know why they took that out?
Why would they remove that?
I don't know. I don't know.
That is a weird thing. I have noticed that there's like versions of Dumb and Dumber where they take scenes out and it doesn't even make sense. Like, there's nothing offensive about them.
Yeah, I see that scene. I don't understand. I mean, I don't know. Do you know him? Does he call you at home? Do you have a dorsal fin? Like, you know, I don't know.
It's all coming back to me now.
It's all coming back to me.
Anyway, I think the answer to this is just no. Even at the time this was made, it was over the top. It was zany. This could only exist with Jim Carrey. I don't know who could be leading this. Like, Steve Carell couldn't do it.
No.
You know, Seth Rogen couldn't do it. James Franco couldn't do it. You know, whoever you can think of, I just can't picture it. And if, you know, even if they decided to do it, it would just be someone, as I mentioned before, doing some kind of Jim Carrey impersonation.
Mm.
Yeah, you might as well not touch this movie and just do a new anything. Because, like, you can't even do the plot.
Yeah.
Like, the plot doesn't work.
Exactly. Mm. They'd have to change too much, like, just to make it sort of...
work.
Yeah, to make it work. And it wouldn't be the same movie. There wouldn't be a point touching it anymore. It's kind of like Dumb and Dumber 2, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think you know what? That's kind of the reason they don't make movies like this anymore, because it just wouldn't work these days. And if they do make a really over-the-top, zany comedy, it's usually like a family movie. Like, it's for kids as well. Which, I mean, I guess this kind of was bordering on that, but there's a bit more kind of adult content.
Yeah, well, I mean, I watched it as a kid-ish.
Yeah, you wouldn't have understood a lot of the jokes.
Sure didn't. That's why I have to rewatch it.
Yes. Do you know about Ace Ventura Jr.?
What?
This might ruin your life if I tell you this.
I've seen the first two movies, and we'll just leave it at that. If it doesn't have Jim Carrey in it, I stay the f*** away.
Yeah, so they made this direct-to-video sequel called Ace Ventura Jr. Watch the trailer. You'll probably cry. It's got this kid, like a 12-year-old kid, playing Ace Ventura's son. He's dressed like Ace Ventura. He's got a wig on that's clearly not his real hair to make him look like Ace Ventura. None of it makes sense. But in this canon world of Ace Ventura, he went to Africa for the second movie. Then he came back. He got back together with Melissa, Courtney Cox's character. They had this kid. And then he apparently disappeared somewhere over the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, and, God. As you do.
And left the mum to raise the kid himself. Courtney Cox is not in the movie. It's Anne Cusack taking up her role. But yeah, watch the trailer and try not to, to throw up like those cops at the end of
So here's another thing. Did you ever watch the TV, like the cartoon show?
Yes.
Because there was an Ace Ventura cartoon show, and there was also Mask the Mask. As well. Yeah, and they were actually a shared universe.
There was a Dumb and Dumber one too.
Oh, well, there was.
See, yeah. Imagine that. You could have, like, if there was those kind of movies made now, you could have a shared universe, because that's kind of, that's the hot thing, you know?
Mm. Can I just say that getting lost over the Bermuda Triangle is a 90s plot line right there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think his last words were to his kid? Take her now, bye-bye then.
I'll never forget those words.
Okay, so here's some useless trivia. Rick Moranis of Ghostbusters and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids fame apparently turned down the role of Ace Ventura, and gee, that would have been a very different movie. It's hard to imagine what this movie would even be without the Jim Carrey-ness. Like,
honey, I found the cat.
But there's a long list of people who turned down or were rejected for the role, I guess, before they picked Jim Carrey. Alan Rickman, Nelson, Rob Schneider, and even Whoopi Goldberg was in discussions at one point.
Can you imagine Alan Rickman?
I know, like...
And his delivery would just be, like, so dry. Be like, you're a Satan. Oh, I'm sorry. You sounded like someone else. Like, I know I'm just basing him off Snape, but, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. He was in Galaxy Quest later in the 90s, but I can't really think of him doing, like, over-the-top comedy ever. Yeah.
Too busy killing Dumbledore, or what?
We've come to this part of the show. It's the Steve Buscemi Spark Plug Award, and this is where we acknowledge a smaller role in the film that is worthy of some acclaim for just kind of lighting it up for the short time that they are on camera. There's a few nominees. I want you guys to help me decide. We've got...
The parrot that nods its head while they're having sex. Done.
Well, there's the parrot. Or the monkey, too, that does a pretty good job. So there's Mark McGullis, who plays Mr. Chickadance, a.k.a. Hector from Breaking Bad, with his coughing.
A.k.a. Satan.
Yes. Dan Marino, the actual... NFL legend.
For his acting skills in portraying himself.
Mm. Yep. John Capodici, who's Aguado. And then Mrs. Finkel, played by Alice Drummond. Can you think of, if I missed anyone, any spark plugs?
Like a noticeable performance. That's a theorious question.
I feel like there's apart from like the main roles, everyone else is kind of like too small to really matter apart from those four. Like, yeah, you got the guy with the wearing the two pairs of glasses, but
he doesn't. What about really Melissa's do much. Dog? When I saw that, yeah. I truly believed that the dog was sad because of the dog.
What a good boy.
What are you feeding? He's miserable.
He's miserable.
I'm going to give it to Hector from Breaking Bad.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, transformative performance there. You guys didn't even recognize him.
Well, me, that scene with him is such a huge one, so I would probably have to give that to him as well.
All right. Congratulations, Mark. You've won this prestigious honor. Last question. Is Ace Ventura still a good movie?
Yes.
Yeah. It's still an enjoyable movie. Like, I still had some giggles. So
Ace Ventura is tied with Step Brothers as my favorite comedy of all time.
Really? Ooh. Tied with Step Brothers? That's huge, man.
Yeah. I love... Every time I watch Ace Ventura and every time I watch Step Brothers, I like laugh my ass off. It's so good.
I think... Can you imagine like what maybe 15 years from now, are we going to be recording an episode about Step Brothers and how it hasn't aged well?
Hey, you, that movie's great.
I know, right? I love it.
It won't be 15 years because I think after we finish... doing 90s movies, we're going to do some 80s movies on here, and then we're going to go into the 2000s, probably, you know, 2020, 2021. So by then it will be like 15 years since movies like Step Brothers and Superbad. So
you're telling me you have 2020 vision for this podcast?
Absolutely. Beyond. I have vision into the well into the 2020s. But I'll have to remember to get you back there for Step Brothers when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that.
I'm ready for that.
I mean, I think that Ace Ventura holds up as a good Jim Carrey movie. If you don't love Jim Carrey, you're not going to like Ace Ventura.
Like, yeah, it's very much him.
Mm. Yeah. If you see even like a clip of Jim Carrey and think that it's not funny or lame, then you're going to want to stay away from Ace Ventura. But, you know, it's just great for people that grew up with that to be able to go back to a simpler time where, I guess, apart from the offensive ending to this movie, you can just watch the whole thing and feel good and laugh at this crazy character who just could not exist in the real world. It's almost like watching it's like watching a cartoon. It's like watching The Simpsons or like Ren and Stimpy or something.
Another thing that I didn't notice when I was younger, when he's talking through his butt, one of the things he says is like, he's like, "Asshole, oh sodomy." I didn't know what that was when I was a kid. Sodomy. There you go. Makes sense. Speaking from his butt. There you go. You learn everything.
It's a layered script.
Layered comedy. Every time I watch it, I learn something new, you know?
Keeps on giving.
It's a gift that keeps on giving, yeah.
Who knows what you will learn next time, Andrew. But that's it. Obviously, iTunes reviews go a long way to helping out the show, so by all means, help us out. Leave one of those tasty 5-star ratings, and shout out, of course, to our Patreon producers who made this happen. You guys are absolute legends. If you want to let us know what you thought of the episode, share your views, tell us what you love and hate and feel about Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, you can let me know on Twitter at Jono himself. Guys, where can they find you?
You can find a couple of NPCs on all things social media. You can follow me personally at aclay1788 on Instagram and Twitter.
And you can follow me personally at blueshift77 on Instagram and Twitter as well. So
excellent. Thank you guys for coming on the show. I think this is our first podcast together.
It's
been fun.
Yeah, no, it is.
We've broken the podcast cherry together.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is. It's magic.
You can join us on the next episode. We're watching There's Something About Mary with Brendan and Salim from The Hungry Gamers. Don't miss that one. And dear listeners, thank you for joining us on Comedy Rewind. As always, be kind.
Take care now. Bye-bye then.